I'm Phil Taylor. Phil Condon is here. We're going to be speaking in a few moments with Robin Philpott, publisher of Baraka Books. And we're going to ask him what happened in this recent election, because there seems everybody's trying to explain it. And I think we have him on the line. Are you there, Robin Philpott?
Yes. Hi, Phil.
Thank you for joining us. We recruited you late because the people are trying to assert the tea leaves as to what happened. We all know that there's a majority now, and we all know that we have Justin Trudeau and as a prime minister. And actually, I was just speaking to Professor Yakov Rabkin, and there are some clear signs that a different course is going to be struck by this new liberal leadership.
Yeah.
And, of course, a major matter always in Canada is to comprehend the political wishes of Quebec, mm-hmm. going because since the origin of the country involved the two nations, the French and English, mm-hmm. and there were agreements struck which last to this day, which are observed, particularly language and culture. Mm-hmm. Now, the last election was a big windfall for the NDP, which startled many people. I bet it even included you, that how many seats were won by the NDP. And it gave them not only, of course, greater say within the parliament, they were the opposition, but they became, in an unofficial kind of expression, the voice of Quebec in the federal parliament.
Right.
So, but this changed the other night. They are now reduced somewhat. So could you tell us what accounts for this phenomenon?
Well, what happened in 2011 is that, you know, since 1980, the Liberals had never gotten a majority of seats or in Quebec or a majority of a popular vote. They'd been basically shunned since the Constitution. In other words, the Constitution of 82, which was signed over and against the will of Premier René Lévesque, and that Constitution has still not been signed in Quebec. Not been signed. And so Quebecers have boycotted the Liberal Party and on the whole. I mean, Jean Chrétien would win a majority in Canada, but it would still be a minority in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
The Quebecers voted for Mulroney, who promised to right the wrong of 1982, the Canadian Constitution. That led to Meech. And people in Quebec stopped
the invisible lake. Yes.
They stopped voting their conservatives and parked their vote in the Bloc with the Bloc Québécois for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Basically, a protest vote, a vote for sovereignty was going up to the 95 referendum. And then in 2011, there were certain signs that the NDP wanted to do something different, and people were questioning the Bloc strategy because people, you know what happens, they get to Parliament, they get a good salary, and then they stop fighting. And a lot of Quebecers were, a lot of sovereigntists were not satisfied with what the Bloc was doing. So the NDP basically walked in there and took over from the Bloc and what had been one time Liberal vote, and they had something like 50 seats, I think. It was close to that. They had a very high level of the popular vote, higher, by the way, than Justin Trudeau. Justin Trudeau, the Liberals got their popular vote was 35%, which is still not massive in Quebec. You know, they got the seats, 40 mm-hmm. something seats, but their popular vote was still, you know, they are going to be governing for Ontario. That's where their government is based, you might say. And mm-hmm. So in this election, now there's some interpretations are saying, well, what happened to the NDP? Well, the Trudeau got the anti-Harper vote. Mm-hmm. That Mulcair was getting in earlier, in the summer polls, that Mulcair said, you know, they said he had 46% of the popular vote in Quebec. Those are summer polls, and anybody who looks at polls knows that you can never trust summer polls.
Mm-hmm.
And they started their slow decline that became quite quick. 1st of September, this was 2 weeks before there was any discussion of the NECAB, you know, which I would like to talk if you allow me.
Very
about
important,
shortly.
I'm glad you raised that. I should have used that word in the introduction. Yes, go on.
Yeah, but the Conservatives in 2011 only had 16% of the popular vote, and despite what some people are saying, they got 16% in this vote. In other words, they didn't make any gains, they didn't make any losses in Quebec. They were already, you might say, the fourth party.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to make hay on the NECAB. They did not succeed. They got some seats because of a division of the other vote. Mm-hmm. In other words, anybody who says the NECAB became an election issue or a ballot issue, they're kidding themselves. It did not. It didn't help them win.
Go ahead.
Stayed on. The Bloc, they had almost 20% of the votes, and they went down from 24%. They, at a certain point, also tried to make hay on the NECAB, but it did not pay off. Mm-hmm. Where they did win, they won with, and I know the people personally, they are progressive trade unionists.
These are their candidates.
Social democratic candidates who'd been working for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And it was their winning was not based on anything to do with the NECAP. And then all the areas that everybody that were being accused of being so anti-Muslim, they either voted for the Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you say like the center of Quebec, the Trois-Rivières, Shawinigan area, they voted Liberal, or the NDP, certain areas of the South Shore of Montreal. Montreal East, all the NDP won 4 seats in Montreal East, which
when you say Montreal East, what is that population, and
well,
how would
you
characterize
it? It's like I'd say 80% French speaking, and 85% French speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody will speak French, largely, with families of. Historical families have been here for centuries and centuries. A lot of, a lot of new immigrants. But if you move into Montreal East, you've got to be a French speaker,
Yeah. And four seats from there were won by the
NDP.
Yeah,
four seats, which were the first seats where the Bloc was elected in the 90s. They were the first seats to ever vote for sovereignty. And their candidates are people who've been known as some of the candidates in there were for voting for sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
As well in the past, but they didn't. They're sort of, with the sort of like the weakening of a sovereignty movement. Well, they thought we'll give the NDP a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Liberals won is West End Montreal, which is English and a little more upscale.
Mm-hmm.
So you might say that the working class or what they used to say, the ordinary people, stuck with the NDP or the Bloc. Sometimes went Liberal, but there is it's not something you can put in a can and say this is what happened in Quebec.
Yeah.
It's quite evenly divided, and the results are. So I don't know whether that's been any help.
Well,
part.
It certainly does. I mean, particularly it clarifies this thing of the East Montreal East and the working class base there. The fact that it went that it's Francophone and it went NDP. And did
they
not,
did not go liberal.
And did
they
not
know the Liberals.
And was not motivated or animated by Mr. Duceppe's joining Harper in discussing the NECAB.
Yeah.
By the way, there had to be a lot of disappointment in people who, like you mentioned, some of these Bloc candidates, some of them are trade unionists and very progressive people. They must not be unhappy to see the backside of Mr. Duceppe.
Well, to see the back.
See him stepping out.
Well, yes, and I don't want to, because I haven't spoken to them personally, and everybody's respecting Duceppe because of his long contributions. And, Duceppe, on this question of you might say, the bigoted vote, which some people had tried to raise or tried to garner in the previous Quebec elections, Giuseppe had been very clearly opposed to this charter of Quebec values. He came out very strong with it. I can't understand why he got all worked up about the NECAB.
Has he reflected on this? Has there been any reflection? Because, you know, now the leaders are sorting out, well, I was for this, I shouldn't have been for that, and that sort of thing. Has he commented at all?
No, that people haven't commented on that. But there are comments in the press by, for instance, La Presse, which is not a sovereigntist paper by any means, a columnist, was saying right after the election, was saying, let's make it very clear, the NECAB was a peripheral issue. And the pollsters were all wrong about that. Mm-hmm. In other words, saying that was going to be the issue. Mm-hmm. The people who say that the NDP was lost because of that. The only thing that they lost there is Mulcair's attempt to finesse the question. Mm-hmm. He tried to speak out of both sides of his mouth, which people accused him of doing, and which he did as well on the question of the pipeline from the tar sands in northern Alberta. He did try and say, people found him saying two things, different things, whether he's speaking French or English, as if people here in Quebec don't understand understand English. Mm-hmm. So he was doing that, and he also decided to call himself, everybody knew him as Thomas or Thomas, and then he became Tom, and everybody was making a joke about him. He's Thomas when he's speaking in Quebec and Tom in Canada. He was playing kind of funny games.
Yeah.
And he started,
a lot of people don't find it funny. Yeah,
he started declining well before the NECAB. The NECAB started around the 15th of September. So people who want to draw conclusions, as is the want of many people in Canada, English Canada, say, well, racism, that takes place in Quebec. Mm-hmm. They're wrong on this question.
Yeah. Well, by the way, apropos of that, very much to her credit, a very distinguished journalist, Antonia Zibersius, wrote a very good column. I saw it in Now magazine, where she said, why don't, you know, if you're looking for acts of bigotry, and particularly on the NECAB question, she said, you actually find more, there were instances, really ugly ones, in Calgary, but she said the media here, the English media, wanted to see it in Quebec, didn't want to see it elsewhere.
Right. It is. No, I mean, it is not to say, I don't want to whitewash anybody here about it was people were playing with fire. Some people were playing with fire. But there's a lot of people commenting, and I see it in the social media, and people who are convinced and active sovereigntists who are mad that the Bloc tried to use that game. Mm-hmm. And another point is that people also thought that Gilles Duceppe, who has traditionally been a very progressive guy, made a serious mistake on the Syrian question.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting a lot of flack from people who were militant. Bloc.
He was supporting the mission, right, to flying over...
Yeah.
Being in Syrian airspace, which, by the way, as Professor Abkin told us, I mean, that's in violation of international law and the sovereignty of Syria. You would think that people labeled sovereigntists would be the first to point that out.
Yeah. You know what happened here, it has to do with partisan politics. The Bloc saw their big problem as being the NDP, because the NDP had taken their votes in 2011. So what they did, and it's knee-jerk politics, was to say the NDP says this, then we're going to say that. And I think that's what led them to do the NECAB thing and also the Syrian thing,
yes,
which made them look ridiculous, and they got a lot of flack for it. It was wrong. I mean, the previous leader who Duceppe came and replaced had taken the best position of any party represented in the parliament when they started bombing in Syria. They said this is in violation of the international law. And he was elected, by the way.
Yeah.
So, in other words, they
call that being too smart by half.
Yeah, and also being not following what the world, what's happening in the world. And so in some ways, Gilles Duceppe has done a good job in his 20 years there, or so, 20. And but perhaps the fact that he's left may allow some fresh voices to develop in Ottawa. I just want to say, as far as we know, Trudeau, Justin, has invited Elizabeth May to go to Paris and is inviting the opposition parties, but in typical liberal fashion has decided not to invite the Bloc. Now, that's his father and Jean Chrétien all over again, because the Bloc...
Yes, they used to go off to international gatherings, take everybody but Quebec.
Yeah, or not even... And not do everything to make it so Quebecers who voted for the Bloc, 800,000, 900,000 people, and they have 10 seats, well, we'll invite everybody but them.
Do they account, when they do that, is there a press release that explains that, their position?
Well, I haven't seen any. I've seen a lot of comments
saying... So it's
just saying,
done. So they just do it and leave us to speculate over why.
Yeah, I think what happens is they can count on English Canada just saying, not wanting to see the Bloc there, and so, you know, it's like the toothache, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they just want to pretend it doesn't. It's not
like
there.
The English with the Irish or the Spanish with the Catalonians.
Yeah, and the Scots.
Yeah.
There are some interesting points. Quebec is very much follows closely what goes on in Scotland, what goes on in Catalonia, and the Scottish have come out very strong against the Syrian war. They're going to vote against it in Westminster. That helps, I think, Corbyn,
yes,
because the Blairites are going to want to vote in favor of intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Scots are saying no more Afghanistans, no more Libyas, no more Iraqs, no more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there are a lot of Quebecers and sovereigntists who are watching that, and we'll learn. We can expect to see that kind of development here in Quebec.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you made that point. This is Robin Philpott, his publisher, Baraka Books. By the way, you are the author of a book which has been reprinted, which is a great, you know, that's a feather in the cap of the author. Your book has been reprinted and updated. What's the title of that, and where can people get it?
It's Le Référendum Volé. It's 20 years later. It's to be translated by The Stolen Referendum, a book that I wrote in 2005 and came out and sold very well throughout Quebec, and has been republished with an update and taking into consideration what has happened since then, and we published it for the 20th anniversary and the elections, and this week is the 20th anniversary of that.
Hmm.
Essentially, the book says that Canada, during the referendum in 1995, 20 years ago, Canada threw out all the rules and said, my country, right or wrong. They violated Quebec's election laws. There were people like John Hondrich, who I interviewed, Brian Tobin here there in Toronto, who just said, we knew we were breaking the law. Tough. That's tough. I said, we're just waiting for them to try and apply
their
law.
That's the old my country, which includes your country,
right
or wrong. Yeah.
And then they came here, 100,000 people brought in by Air Canada and what they used to call Canadian Airlines.
Yes, VRI. The great love in. We love you, stay.
We love you. You know, and it's just, they called it 11, they called it Woodstock.
These people don't believe in the right to divorce.
It's gross. I mean, if people say we like Quebec, then we'll say you decide what you want to do, and we'll respect your decision. That is what respect and love is about. You know, you say
yes.
You decide on yours. It came to a situation where Quebec, you know, whereas Canada lectures the world about democracy.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to respecting Quebec's democratic and fundamental right to determine its future,
mm-hmm.
Canada just said, we do not respect your laws. And when the Quebec government and the returning officer in Quebec tried to investigate this, he was shut out when he went to Ottawa. When they went to Ottawa, and the government said the Queen can do no wrong. Essentially, that's what I'm saying. You cannot investigate members of Parliament in the Canadian Parliament because you are only a province. Oh. Now, these are Quebec laws, duly adopted. Until further change, they are Canadian laws. Mm-hmm. But here, the government says we can violate those laws. We have Quebec has a spending limit, $5 million for each camp, the yes and the no camp. But we can spend $5 million here, $10 million there,
yes.
And figures that have came out after that they had reserved $20 million for unity. That's the Canadian government. We're not talking about what the Toronto Star did when they chartered mm-hmm. buses, put in ads to fill up the
yes.
the demonstration here. So anyway, it's very important.
By the way, you've examined it, and it's widely discussed and understood, the basic story as you're relating to us, in the French media. But once again, this is our reality. It is not discussed or thought about in English media, except in a sort of self-congratulatory way. We loved our country so much, we broke the rules, and so sue me.
And then we'll just make it a cause célèbre, which is what John Hundrich told me. He said, just let them come. I'm just waiting for them, you know.
Yes.
And I just want to say that one of the reasons we founded Baraka Books was that when this book came out in 2005, I was in an interview with media and they said to me, when will you get an English version so we can read the book? And I said, you find me a publisher and you'll have it in 2 months.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, no publisher wants to touch this kind of thing. So that was one of our...
You sort of felt like a black novelist.
Yeah, in a sense it is, because you're trying to say things that maybe, you know, there are a lot of good people with goodwill who do want to know this. They do want to read this in Canada.
Yes.
But some people just say, well, no, this isn't interesting to read. You shouldn't read this.
Yes. Well, we have, you know, the Pope used to have a list of things you could read and you can't read, and it turns out that these governments, made mainly of Protestants, actually, have lists that you can't, books you should not read.
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead. You were going to say?
No. And in that book, I did that, was when I did an interview with Jane Jacobs of Toronto.
Yes.
Because I wanted to point out a vision of a woman who didn't speak French, but who understood the national question, city.
A brilliant book.
A brilliant book and a brilliant woman. And she'd written this book in 1980, and I interviewed her in 2005 and to see whether she still believed in what she'd said. And she said more than ever. And the only reason she agreed to do the book is because it was about Quebec, because nobody ever wanted to ask her about it.
Yes.
When Jane Jacobs died a year later, and Jane Jacobs wrote 7 books, including the question of separatism,
mm-hmm.
which is but when she died, the Globe and Mail ran an obituary where they said she had a bibliography. She'd written 6 books, and they ignored the fact that she'd published the book, The Question of Separatism, which is her only book about Canada, by the way.
Yeah, and
only book.
And it
whereas
is. She's a great scholar. It's a brilliant book. I mean, actually, whether you agree with her or not, it's a brilliant book.
Disappear
the book, send it into that space from which it cannot come back. That is cultural madness.
And the book was, you know, the New York Times did when she died, they did say that she wrote that book, but the Globe and Mail said no, didn't
they? Didn't know it was forbidden to say that.
Yeah.
Those Americans.
And that book was the only one of her books that was out of print, and Baraka, we went and acquired the rights and put it out because we said this book, a great thinker like her, this book has to be out.
Well, by the way, she gave a lecture, did she not, at the University of Toronto on the subject? And didn't they manage to not reprint that for a long time?
Oh, her book was based on her lectures, on the Massey lectures.
Yes.
CBC invited her to do a Massey lectures on the subject of her choice. This was 79. So she chose the major issue being debated, which is question of sovereignty.
Yeah.
Well, of course, that book came out. First, the CBC printed a a version of it. Then she refined the book and put it out with Random House. But the book just never, just was out, you couldn't even find it anymore. It was out of print, and you couldn't get it in many libraries even.
But didn't you have an interview with her where you asked her about it, and she gave you the answer that nobody had asked her except you? What was that?
Well, exactly. I said to her, you must get a lot of questions on this. And she said, this was in 2005. She was 88, 25 years after the book. And she said, no, you're the first.
That story, Robin, could become the sort of starting point for a decent scholar to discuss the national madness of that comes under the rubric of Canada and the two peoples. I better ask you quickly here at the end, because we're having a teacher's dispute in Ontario with the government, and the Ontario government has become quite harsh in its language about what they're going to do with the teachers and saying they're going to dock their pay. Now, you're having similar matters in Quebec. You had a demonstration, a common front of public sector workers, 150,000 people. And I heard that there were going to be strikes rotating. Could you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, there were today rotating strikes. The Abitibi, you know, Val-d'Or, the Rouyn-Noranda area, I think in the Shawinigan, Three Rivers, and about three other areas. All week there are going to be rotating strikes of the public sector workers, including teachers, against austerity. So in other words, it's going to be going on all week, and you're learning it here. Because I agree with you, nobody wants to talk about this.
These matters are not. It's always we have. It happens here, and what goes on in Ontario stays in Ontario. It seems to be the thing. And, of course, Quebec does not actually exist. It is somewhere south of Slovenia. We know that, and they're very curious people. Robin Philpott, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. It's been very enlightening. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Phil.
Sure thing. Robin Philpott, listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and you can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, and check us out, taylor-report.com. Hanny, thank you very, very much. And Phil Conlon, and next week we'll worry about baseball. We'll see you.
The CIUT 89.5 FM Fall Membership Drive is happening November 9th to November 15th.